Thank you both. Next up is Irwin Naturals versus Department of Revenue.
Good morning.
Morning.
May it please the court, Michael Bowen for the appellant, Irwin Naturals. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Okay.
Your Honor, during the periods at issue, Irwin Naturals sold nutritional products in the state of Washington. They did so through two different types of sales, wholesale sales and retail sales. For our purposes today, the undisputed facts are that these two sale channels were operated functionally independent of one another. What I mean by that is that the wholesale channel, the hub of the activity for the wholesale channel, all the activity associated with marketing, sales, and so forth, for the most part, was generated through the headquarters in Los Angeles, California. They did hire independent sales representatives that were in the state of Washington in order to solicit sales from Washington retailers. The target market was, for the purposes of the wholesale channel, Washington retailers. Different branding and product mix as well. The brands that were sold through the wholesale channel were of a different brand, a different title. The inventory that was sold through the wholesale channel, with one exception, which I'll get to in a moment, was also different. You wouldn't have had any crossover with the retail channel.
Irwin Naturals was identified, though, in association with both products, retail and wholesale.
When you say identified, I'm not sure what you mean.
On labels?
No. No, Your
Honor. Irwin Naturals?
No? The undisputed facts in the record are that they operated totally independent of one another from a branding standpoint, meaning that brand X would have been through the wholesale channel, brand Y would have been through the retail channel. But further, Your Honor, except with respect to one product, the totally different inventories. What was sold through wholesale was completely different from what was sold through retail. And if I went to the CVS in Seattle to purchase product Y, I would never know that the other product was being sold through retail by telephone or internet through the retail channel.
So if I went to the Irwin Naturals website and looked under products or whatever, what would I find there?
Well, you would find probably product references, Your Honor, but I don't believe...
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, they probably talk about different types of products that are sold, but again, I'm not exactly sure that the...
Were both wholesale and retail products on the Irwin website?
I'm not sure during the period at issue, Your Honor, whether or not that was true. I think that was mostly an informational site talking about the company, Clear Irwin, who's the owner, his background, and so forth. I don't believe there would have been product information on that site. I think the product information would have been directed towards the brand. So, for example, Nature Secret was one of the brands that was used through the wholesale channel. You would have gone to naturesecret.com, and you would have seen what products were offered pursuant to that brand. It wouldn't have been under the Irwin Naturals.
Only, if you go to Nature Secret, you'll only see
Nature Secret.
You don't see any reference to any other brands at all.
Correct. But, Your Honor, you wouldn't, I suspect, go to Nature Secret. Again, that was sold through the wholesale. So the only folks, theoretically, that would go to the Nature Secret website would be CVS, somebody who would want to purchase for wholesale.
What site did the brand label refer customers to for information?
It's label.com. Like, for example, if it was Nature's Secret that was selling the product on a CVS shelf that CVS had purchased from an independent representative through the wholesale channel, that product would have said naturesecret.com. And so if you purchased it, you would have said naturesecret.com. But, Your Honor, what's important to note, if you did go to naturesecret.com, for example, the wholesale channel, and called and said, hey, I love this product, I would like to purchase more of it, I'm a Washington resident, you wouldn't be able to do that. The way that the wholesale channel operated for Irwin Naturals was there was no cross-selling. There was no saying, oh, yeah, we can sell you that as a Washington resident, because you couldn't. They don't compete with their own market, which was the Washington retailers. So hopefully I've answered your question. The retail channel was operated wholly outside of the state of Washington. No independent sales representatives in the state, no payroll, no property, nothing of that sort. Any and all advertising, sales solicitation was done by phone or internet. The target market were Washington resident end users.
The record here doesn't tell us, though, who made the decision what products to offer on the retail channel.
And that, I don't think that's a relevant concern, Your Honor, for dissociation purposes as to what, I mean.
Isn't it a significant factor, though, where the information comes from to make the decision? We think Washingtonians are really big on vitamin D. Let's load up on some stuff that's high on vitamin D and our retail sales. If that source of information comes from a shared source or based on the wholesale activities, wouldn't that run contra to disassociation?
No, well, I think that the significant test, Your Honor, for dissociation, you know, at least based on your 2015 decision in Avnet, this is whether or not in-state activities were significantly associated with the ability to create or establish or maintain a market for the outside activities. And in this case, you had wholesale activities in the state. They sold certain products pursuant to their business model. And whether or not those in-state activities, which we've conceded nexus, somehow either create or maintain a market for the retail market.
I guess what I'm trying to suggest is if there's shared research and development, isn't research and development an important part of establishing or maintaining a market, retail or wholesale?
That's a great question. I apologize if I misunderstood. So as far as the shared research goes, again, the undisputed facts of this case are not to that direct point, but what they are is that any and all retail activity, any activity conducted with respect to marketing, selling, collection, distribution associated with the retail side of the business was done by third parties. There was no sharing. There's no evidence in the record there was any sharing, nor am I aware of there being any sharing of information as between the two discussing which products to sell where.
Don't you need to meet the standards of Rule 193 and the Norton or Norton enhanced standards?
Well, under Avnet,
have some evidence of excluding that? We got a research and development from this completely separate source.
Well, you know, under you know, I didn't come here all the way from Florida to argue against Avnet, but I plan to argue that we fall under the whole thing, meaning that we have the ability to show in the evidence that's in the record that the wholesale activity was not substantially, you know, I understand what you're saying, Your Honor. I guess the argument that you're making or the point that you're making is if the wholesale information were available to the retail, you know, perhaps they could have helped create or maintain the market for the retail. I had not considered that question, nor has that question been raised. I have, you know, Irwin Naturals has stuck solely to the position that, look, we had certain products that we sold in the state. We had certain, you know, methods by which we sold it. We had certain pricing strategies that we used. And, you know, whether or not a Washington resident who goes into a CVS and sees a product will be able to associate it with the retail products that are sold under a different channel. And if that's true, if they're not, if there's no link between the two in Washington, then you should be able to argue for dissociation because there's no ability to create or maintain a market in Washington with respect to those sales.
Well, the one product that was sold by both, isn't that the example of how the wholesale channel has created a market that can be used to spin off retail products as they're introduced, whether it's your strategic decision to just get your feet wet, then move them to wholesale or take them to their peak, and when they start descending, move them to wholesale? Isn't wholesale really maintaining a market if that's your strategy for retail?
I have 30 seconds. I'm going to do my best to answer your question, but it's a great one. But in this case, you have it with Dual Action Cleanse, which is the product that you mentioned, was actually introduced by the retail channel and sold at a very high price. And the pricing record, the pricing information is in the record as to how mm-hmm. the product was sold at what price. And at the retail, I believe it was $50 you know, for that product. It was sold for 2 years before it was even offered at wholesale. And it was one of those as-seen-on-TV products that you probably have seen in various stores. So it sold at retail at a very high price. When the sales began to level out, when the sales began to level out, they employed this as-seen-on-TV approach and began selling it at wholesale at that point, right, at a much lower price to Washington retailers. If anything, Your Honor, the argument would be that ultimately the retail helped create and maintain the market for the wholesale, not the reverse. The wholesale selling of the product did not increase the retail and the reason why I argue that, Your Honor, is I don't go into CVS and see the product for, you know, $30 and think to myself, oh, man, I want to go on retail and I'll pay $50 for it. It just doesn't make any sense.
Without the wholesale, you would have had to retain it in retail or drop it.
Correct.
Benefit.
Again, I guess I'm not, yeah. Thank you.
May it please the Court, Josh Weissman representing the Department of Revenue. The trial court correctly ruled that all of Irwin's Washington destination retail sales were subject to tax in Washington. The issue in this case is actually quite narrow. It doesn't concern apportionment, double taxation, the relationship between the state and the value being taxed, or where the sale occurs. Only the substantial nexus prong of the Commerce Clause is at issue. And Irwin concedes that at least for its wholesale sales, Washington has nexus with the entity Irwin through its employee visits and the independent contractors it employs here. The only issue is the so-called transactional nexus. But the only thing that the case law requires on transactional nexus is a minimal or rational connection between the state and the transaction. So here, all the products were ordered, all the products at issue, the retail sales, were ordered in Washington, delivered to Washington, and so far as we know, consumed in Washington. And so that easily creates nexus with the transactions. Irwin wants to turn the clock back to the 1950s to a case decided during the era of interstate tax immunity. And in that case, it was held the taxpayer has the burden of proof to show that interstate sales are dissociated from local business and instead are immune interstate sales. But
are you talking about the B&O tax now or the retail sales tax or both?
We're still talking about both.
Okay.
And I'll get to the distinction between the two, Your Honor. But the United States Supreme Court cast aside that the concept of interstate tax immunity in 1977 in the complete auto transit case. And in the wake of that, earlier cases about whether activities are related to in-state or interstate sales are related to local activities or related to this immune interstate commerce are now of much more limited relevance. And so National Geographic is directly on point as to the sales tax, which is the bulk of the assessment at issue here. That case, the taxpayer relied heavily on Norton to say that its interstate sales of maps and globes were unrelated to its California advertising solicitation. And the court rejected that argument and said, despite any dissociation between your interstate sales and your local activities.
Compare the presence in California to the presence in Washington. Under National Geographic in this case. Wasn't the presence of those two offices in California the essential element of the National Geo result?
It might be a greater presence, but in any event, the main principle
is... Well, does the wholesale activity constitute the presence here since there's no allegation of retail presence, retail offices?
I think that's correct, Your Honor.
That's the state's position. The wholesale presence is the presence for purposes of National Geographic.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And so in National Geographic, the court held that there was still, despite any dissociation, there's still a duty to collect. There was still a duty to collect use tax on those interstate sales. So that's dispositive as to the sales and use tax issue. The same analysis really should apply to the B&O tax context. And, in fact, National Geographic relied on B&O tax cases such as Standard Press Steel. As this court held in Avnet, there's been a shift in the case law, one of the early cases being General Motors, where now the courts no longer look at the individual transactions, but instead look at the bundle of corporate activity in the state and whether that's directed towards establishing and maintaining a market. And the case law continued to evolve in Standard Press Steel and Tyler Pipe. And as explained in Avnet, the court no longer looks to whether there's a direct connection between specific sales and in-state activities, but instead whether the taxpayer's activities are directed towards establishing and maintaining a market in the state. Irwin, on the other hand, has not cited a single case, federal or state, from the modern era of Commerce Clause litigation where a court found dissociation. And under the undisputed facts here, Irwin can't meet its burden to show its in-state activities are in no way related to the retail sales. And I won't go through all the facts, but a few of the undisputed facts here that are significant show that there could be no genuine issue of material fact. Both channels involve nutritional supplements, the same type of products, and in one case, the exact same product. There is an integrated market strategy where the biggest retail product, this dual action cleanse, was shifted, as Judge Applewick was discussing, to the wholesale, where the it was referred to by Irwin as commonly branded in its briefing or in one of the independent contractors' contract as having pre-built branding. So there is that crossover, and there's the, you could call it transfer of value between one channel and the other channel.
As to the other products, though, accurate, there's no cross-branding.
We don't know of any other cross-branding. A third significant fact that shows that Irwin could not meet its burden as a matter of law, the wholesale packaging that you get a product in a store would have websites inside the packaging, such as irwinnaturals.com. So there's a connection there. And there are other facts in the record as well.
Well, counsel, yes, disputed that fact, suggesting that the website identification was only of the brand and its website, not Irwin's website.
The discovery, and I think it's at CP 86, which are interrogatory responses, do talk about the different websites that are in the packaging, and one of those is irwinnaturals.com, and there are several others. Now, there's an argument made that you couldn't at that time buy the product from that website, but yet still the brand is out there. There's some kind of commonality between the two.
Well, is it enough if we prove there's commonality, that they originated from the same corporate holding company, the same research base, or the same strategic minds?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
So what does it take to run a separate retail? You have to have a wholly owned subsidiary that does all the retail? You have to have completely some other corporate structure?
There is another line of cases that deal with, I guess that technique would be called, some people call that entity isolation, where you put it in a separate, you put them in separate, and then there's a line of cases talking about affiliate nexus. Can we look at whether one affiliate can be essentially nexus because of that other affiliate? And the cases, there have been cases going different ways, but a number of cases in recent years, there have been cases in California, Wyoming, and New Mexico that have still found nexus on the basis of an affiliate, even though it's a legally separate entity. But that's not.
So Irwin's references to channels are merely their method of doing business, not that they're separately structured independent organizations.
That's correct, Your Honor. Irwin's asking the court to, well, and one other point I'd like to make is that I think it's undisputed here the burden is on the taxpayer to show the absence of any connection. So any facts that might be missing in the record, it's the taxpayer's burden to show the absence of any connection. Irwin's asking the court to ignore the last 50 years of Commerce Clause case law and apply the discarded tax immunity doctrine. But it hasn't cited a single modern case that supports its theory of transactional nexus, that there has to be a direct connection between particular sales and in-state activities. Irwin had substantial nexus to Washington for all its Washington destination retail sales, and this court should affirm.
Doesn't their briefing argue that Quill dictates a different result?
Yes, Your Honor, it doesn't. Quill merely upheld a case called National Bellis Hess from 1967 that said if you have no physical presence in a state, then you do not have to collect sales and use taxes from your customer. And, of course, National Geographic, which rejected dissociation, was after that National Bellis Hess case. And so Quill merely said on the basis of stare decisis that physical presence safe harbor for a company that has no connection, no physical presence in the state, does not have that collection burden. Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors.
Thank you. Judge Spearman, I must say that I think you're on point here with respect to, I think the issues are getting muddled a little bit. I think that the B&O dissociation argument that Irwin's making is under the Avenant decision from 2015, and of course the dissociation for purposes of retail sales tax is controlled by National Geographic. Now, I hate to do National Geographic for you in 1 minute and 30 seconds, but Judge Applewick is right on point when he notes that Quill dictates a different result. Prior to National Geographic in 1977, there was a very hard-line binary test for whether something violated the Commerce Clause, and was very easy to get around, and the court noted that in the case. And then ultimately, when National Geographic was issued, the court moved away from that binary test and said, we need to do a little bit more of a qualitative approach to what violates the Commerce Clause. But it wasn't until 1992 for Quill versus North Dakota case that the Supreme Court said, look, we haven't been very good about distinguishing between the two tests, between when something violates.
And in the course of doing that, didn't Quill cite National Geographic with approval?
It did, for due process clause. For a due process clause.
But the very point was, as long as you've got some presence in that state, which is what National Geographic held, at least as to the use and or sales tax,
but the briefing, in National Geographic, although the taxpayer challenged the dissociation theory under both the due process and Commerce Clause, if you look at the test and the holding of National Geographic, the only answer the court gave was due process clause type of theory. And the reason why we know that to be true is because in Quill, the citation of National Geographic was in the due process discussion.
Right, but Quill doesn't say presence is only retail establishments. It doesn't. There's nothing in that opinion that I can see that says wholesale presence is not presence for purpose of the Commerce Clause.
No, certainly it is, but we're talking about a dissociation. We're not talking about one business activity in the state. For purposes of dissociation, the department's arguing the National Geographic precludes the result. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.